So this is about Maha Mahaprasad. This is from Bhagavatam, first canto, fifth chapter, verse 25. Narada ate the remnants of great devotees, and his heart became purified and freed from anarthas. The word uchishta means remnants. This is one very important feature of Vaishnava culture. It's told in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, says that Bhakta Pada Duli, Bhakta Pada Jal, Bhakta Bhukta Avasheshatin Mahabal. These three are very, very powerful. The remnants, the foot water that washed the feet of a devotee, the dust from his feet, and the food remnants from his mouth, the prasad, that these Mahabal. The next verse says that even a slight contact with any of these, one can get Krishna Prema. So that's the next verse after it. Adina Seva Hoite Krishna Punar Punar the Shastra. The Shastras repeatedly, over and over again, they stress the importance of these three items. And just by contacting, what is the first line? Hey, you say Purna Prema Soy, what do you say?
Adina Seva Hoite Krishna Prema Hoy.
Yeah. Just doing a little bit of service, you can get Krishna Prem. So, we're discussing this point. This is a very important point of Vaishnava culture. To eat the remnants of a great devotee, in the Manusmriti, there are many rules and regulations about whose food to eat, and also in Padma Puran. It describes the karma that you get by eating food with others. With others, like you sit down in the same line and you eat food in a restaurant or in a line with people, you get the karma of the people in the line. Or if you eat after someone else, or if you sit in the same line. So this is in the Manusmriti, it tells it. If you eat after someone else eats or sit in the same line, through food, many things get transferred into our consciousness. Food has a great influence over our consciousness. According to the Upanishad, whatever we eat is divided into three portions. Very interesting, huh? In the Upanishad, I don't know which Upanishad, but the Upanishads explain like this. One portion, the food we eat is divided into three portions. One portion goes to the mind. That means the very subtle aspect of the food. It's a very, very subtle aspect, because the mind is very subtle. One portion of the food goes to the mind. Another portion goes to the body. Another portion is rejected as refuse, right? Just, you know, waste. If food is pure, it purifies our existence. In the Vedic culture, there are many rules about food. How you should collect food should be collected, how it should be cooked, how it should be distributed and eaten. There are many bratas, for example, the Brahmin will eat grains that have dropped from the field after they harvest the grains. Or you go to the marketplace. This is called karma-free food. They go and harvest the grains, and then some are dropped in the fields. You know, they don't collect them all. And you go and collect those, and then cook them and eat them, and then there's no karma there. The Bhagavad Gita speaks in 3:13. It says, Yagya Shishashino Shanto Munchanti Sarvakilbashi Yepachantyat Makaranat Sarva. Yagya Shishashino Shanto Munchanti Sarvakilbashi. Something, Yepachantyat Makaranat. It says it. Food that is eaten, if people eat food which is not offered in sacrifice, verily they're eating only sin. So if you eat any food that's not offered in sacrifice, you're actually eating sin. So that food which is not offered to Krishna, which is yagya or sacrifice, then it produces sin or contamination or impurity in the mind and body. So the food that we must first offer to God, otherwise the food that we're cooking is sinful, even if it's vegetarian or whatever. The Vedic statements prove that Food does much more than just nourish the material body. Also, food has a strong influence over our mind. You should understand this very clearly. It's not a small, it's a very serious point. We say only eat Krishna prasad, and everyone says, oh, what's this? This is some minor rule. This is some minor rule they tell you when you come to ISKCON. One should only eat Krishna prasad. Ah, what's this? I eat this, that, that. But it's actually very, very strict rules and regulations throughout this Manusmriti and Padma Puran and other Upanishads, and in our Gaudiya Vaishnava writings also about food. Therefore, food should be eaten mainly. So, food, because it has such an influence, it does more than just nourish our body. Food also influences our mind. Therefore, food should be eaten mainly for the mind. So, we have to consider what. That my mind is going to be affected by this food. So how much careful I have to be to eat very pure food. Not only pure food, it must be sin-free food, karma-free food. Karma-free, sin-free food means food that is offered to Krishna. Because my mind is, for example, we just cooked for ourselves. We always cook most all the time. Especially Chaturmasya, we're cooking for 4 months. And it keeps the mind so pure, and now I'm eating food cooked by other people. I can feel the difference. When you cook for yourself, and you don't eat anything else but Krishna prasad, I'm only eating once a day, not a morsel of anything else. Once a day for 4 months, how much you can feel in your mind, because it directly affects your mind. It's like, you know, in your mind sometimes you feel disturbed, sometimes you feel agitated, sometimes you feel lusty, sometimes you feel fearful, sometimes you feel anxious, sometimes you feel peaceful. These are mental experiences everyone has. So, and these are caused by disturbances in the physical body, they can be disturbances in our environment, disturbances in our emotional body, disturbances caused by our prarabdha karma. There's so many causes of these factors, these experiences we have within the mind. So food is also a very important factor. And this is what we should understand here, how important it is.
Which is in our control. Most of the factors.
Which is in our control, and the other things are not in control, whether your wife goes crazy or not, or... what your prarabdha karma is, that's from your last life. So this food thing is so important. Therefore, food should be eaten mainly for the mind. This is a very interesting point. Usually we eat food for the tongue. Or we eat food for the eyes. Well, that looks good. Strawberry shortcake covered with cherries. Or whatever, I don't know. Some kind of thing. Blueberry cheesecake. Homemade. First they'll say, blueberry cheesecake, and they bring it inside. Oh, that's okay, that's nice. No, but it's homemade. Oh, homemade! Homemade blueberry cheesecake. That makes it even better. Then you say, by my grandmother. Oh my God. Grandmother, approved, certified. I must definitely eat it right now, even though I just finished Chapan Bhog. I just ate to my neck, but I have to eat 5 more pieces of cheesecake because, you know, it's homemade and my grandmother made it after all. And not only that, she made it for me. Like so many times people come and say, Maharaj, I made this for you. I say, oh, thank you, I'll offer to Giriraj. No, I don't take anything. I eat the tulsi leaf. They give me a big tiffin of cookies, this, that, the other thing. Okay, Haribo. You know, I'm on brat. And it's like, oh, wow, that looks good. You know, it may look good or great or this or that. So many things, 1,000 things have come my way. I offer them, I give them to the Chokidar. Give them to the Brijavasis. You know, they get the benefit. Everyone, they get benefit. The people's effort goes to good use. Because I know, myself, I'm very reluctant. I feel very... greatest austerity for me, one of the greatest austerity for me is to eat food cooked by someone else. But it's not a good deal. Even though, oh, he's a great cook, she's a great cook, blah, 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 this, that, blah, 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 this, that, the other thing. And they make me gourmet 5-star Oberoi style. pure vegetarian. Paka, prasad. She cooks for all the deities, he cooks for all the deities, he cooks for all the sannyasis, he cooks in all this, you know, hoopla about their adhikar. But the whole thing is, it's their mind and their heart and their consciousness goes into food. And I have to adjust that. And you know, digest that. So it's not very much appreciated. That's why usually you see that sannyasis, and when they travel, at least many prominent old sannyasis I've seen, Either they cook for themselves or they take one brahmacharya. They have one servant who's a disciple. And he can, they go anywhere, everywhere and everywhere with him, and they only eat cooking from his hand. And then they stay, like, you know, Prabhupada the same way. Everywhere he's traveling, Hari Sarvi was cooking every day. And Prabhupada trained him, then he cooked. It was like Prabhupada was cooking, but Prabhupada was cooking through the hand of his servant, of his disciple. All the Vedic laws which govern eating ensure that the mind will not be influenced wrongly or contaminated by eating such food. There's all these different rules about Vedic eating. First you purify the dravya, shud dravya. You have to purify the articles and objects by sprinkling Ganga water on them. Then you put a tulsi leaf. Then you chant mantras. Then you do some different mudras to remove ghosts and boots that maybe enter there. They do like that. And then there's the purifying the place where you're eating, and then the direction you're sitting is also determines the purity. Then you wash your feet, hands, and mouth. Many, many rules they have, all these rules to prevent any contamination, that your mind stays sanguine, stays pure and in a septic position. Septic ahar, septic achar, septic vichar. Septic ahar, septic achar, septic vichar. So if you're ahar means you're eating. If you're eating a septic or pure or uncontaminated, then your behavior will be pure and uncontaminated. It's called achar, Vaishnav sadachar. Sattvic achar, ahar achar. Then sattvic vichar, your discrimination. Vichar means your discrimination, your consideration, your balance will be pure, will be sattvic. When you mix up all this thing, this little that, little this, you're cooking, his cooking, they're cooking, Joe's cooking, Bill's cooking, Tom's cooking, Mary's cooking, everybody's cooking. Tikiwala cooking, and pokori, bale puri wali cooking. So there's many rules, the Vedic rules, because they understand, the great sages and rishis understand all these sources and sources of contamination that will possibly affect the mind, because the mind is everything. The mind is a source of liberation. The mind is a source of bondage. A pure mind liberates the jiva from entanglement in samsara. A contaminated mind keeps him forever bound in samsara, chakra. They know the science. Oh, this is good, this is bad. Oh, watch out for this, watch out for that. So many rules governing food, because food is not... what's there? It's only food. What's the big deal? A little chapati, something. What's the big deal? Always a big deal. The mind's shot, then your everything's shot. The mind's ruined or contaminated, then your whole life can be ruined. There are specific rules about how to collect food, how to cook the food, and after eating. And after eating, no one should eat the remnants of another person, because that will affect the mind. The word achishta, this word achishta, Vaishnava achishta, which is in this verse from first canto, there are different tikkas explaining it. The remnants of person's food, not only in a plate, but also food remaining in the cooked pots, is also called achishta. This is a very interesting point. Once someone eats whatever food in the pots is also called achishta. Therefore, devotees first offer everything to Krishna, then everything else becomes Krishna's achishta, becomes remnants. So, for example, this often happens sometimes at programs. Somebody's cooking, and then they, you know, before they offer to Krishna, the kid's hungry, oh, then they take something out of the pot and offer it to the kid. It happens sometimes.
Before the offering,
all the kids complaining. So as soon as they give that food to the kid, what's ever left in a pot becomes the kiddie's mahaprasad. It's a very important point. That's why I'm saying this word achishta means the, you know, food, the remnants of his mouth, but not only what he's left on his plate, that's his food remnants, but everything that's in the cooking pots is also considered remnants. That's why I don't like to do these home programs. You don't know who ate first. Oftentimes they do that. They often feed the kids. The kids, wah, wah, mommy, oh, I have to make the offering. No, I can't wait. So she's the kid's crying. So she just takes something out and gives it to him. And then she offers it to Thakurji. So now it's an offense because Thakurji is eating her kid's remnants. Let us speak of the sannyasi. So remnants of person's food, not only on the plate, not only what's on the plate, but also what's remaining food in the cook pots, is also called vichishta, remnants. Once someone eats whatever, then whatever food is left in the pots is also called remnants. Therefore, devotees first offer everything to Krishna, then everything else becomes Krishna's remnants, whether it's in the pot or on the maha plate or whatever. When you give your achishta to someone, that person takes your good karma. Therefore, scriptures forbid it. Brahmanas should never eat anyone's remnants. Prabhupada's explaining, if six brahmanas travel with their wives on a yatra, when they stop somewhere to cook, they will all cook separately. The wives will collect the wood and clean, but they won't touch the fire. Only the husband will touch the fire, because they're all brahmins. They may even be brothers or whatever. They're all married. Six brahmins, six wives are going on a yatra from Vrindavan or from Delhi or Bombay to Vrindavan. They stop along the way. The wives gather firewood. They collect some rice and they get some water from the river. And they cook some rice and collect some shak from the roadside. And cook a little wild shak, wild palak, and some rice. But there are six brahmins. When they sit down, they make six fires and six different cookings. They're so particular about getting the consciousness of the other Brahman. I know even today at Radhakund, there's one Brahman friend of mine, he said he'll only eat food from his wife's hand, which is not exactly what we're saying here. He should cook his own. The Shastras say, once a person eats, whatever food remains in the pots is his remnants. There's an injunction, if a Brahman eats someone else's remnants, he goes to hell. Today, people are eating in hotels and restaurants. It is all uchishta, because it is all someone else's remnants. And you go into the hotel and they serve you, but somebody, whoever the first guy was at eight, they cook. Usually it's the cook. You go and look at the cook and think, oh, you want to take his karma? You want to take his karma? You want to have his mind, his consciousness? Because this hotel and restaurant thing is a new thing in India. Previously people would travel over India, there were dharmashalas, and everyone would do their own cooking. There was no such thing as a hotel. That's why this tiffin thing is so, popular, because people used to carry grains and they cook wherever they were traveling. Today people are eating in hotels and restaurants, it's all achishta, because they're all eating someone else's remnants. First the cook tastes it and it becomes his remnants. It's compulsory in many restaurants that the cook must taste it to make sure it's good. Otherwise, how can he know that it's good enough to serve to the customers? And oftentimes, and I don't know if you know, in North India, a cook is called Maharaj. The cook is called Maharaj. So first the first cook, Maharaj, eats it. Then Maharaj remnants. So then everybody's thinking, so Maharaj remnants, here everyone thinks Maharaj is a big title. In our society, oh, I got Maharaj's remnants. But if you go to Rajasthan and say, oh, I got Maharaj's remnants, everybody will laugh because all the cooks are called Maharaj. But in Rajasthan, Maharaj means cook. The cook's called Maharaj because he's the first one to eat the food. Therefore, when you eat in hotels and restaurants, this is the best program to spoil your intelligence. You want to spoil your intelligence and ruin your intelligence, then eat in hotels and restaurants. Eating this kind of food makes one undisciplined. And eating this kind of hotel and restaurant food makes one uncontrolled. Previously in India, there was no such thing as a system of restaurants. People never ate anybody else's food. People never ate the food of others. There were inns and places where travelers would rest, but guests would cook their own food. There was no cooked food there, no prepared or cooked food there. Why? Why was that? Because the populace of India, they understood it, so how contaminating it is to eat someone else's food. So they would not want to eat the food cooked by an unknown person. A Brahmin should not eat anyone's remnants, and he should not give his remnants to another Brahmin. If he does so, he will go to hell. So then it says, it talks, and someone's asking, what about the guru? So people often think that taking the guru's remnants means taking off his plate. But going back to this principle, which I mentioned, that everyone says, oh, Gurudev, you should leave something on your plate. But generally we were trained by Prabhupada not to leave any remnants. The Brahman should not leave anything on his plate. So then someone say, well, how will the disciples get the remnants of the guru? But remember the point I already said. Whenever he eats, you know, that whenever is left is his remnants. So we offered all the food to Krishna, so that what's in the pots is Krishna's remnants. And when the guru takes that, that's Mahaprasad, then it becomes Mahamahaprasad. As the title of this talk is called Mahamahaprasad. So even if the guru eats everything on the plate, then if they eat the remnants, they're getting guru's remnants, because what's in the pots is also guru's remnants. This is a very important principle to understand. If the guru is eating, why would the guru leave remnants? Guru's remnants means what's remaining in the cooking pots or serving pots. It means the guru should eat the food first. The Shastra says if someone is always eating uchishta of unknown persons, he'll become a dog.
Serious.
The Shastra says it's a curse, you'll become a dog because of eating the remnants of others. But of course, there's an exception to this. You may eat the uchishta of your father, your elder brother, your guru, or your husband, I suppose. The Puranic Smritis have a long description of uchishta, because Narada Muni, the whole verse I'm talking about is the word uchishta, which explains that Narada Muni became a great devotee by eating the uchishta. He became a great devotee, he was just a maidservant, he was a Sudrani, the son of a Sudrani. And he was eating the remnants of great devotees. They were allowing him. He asked their permission. Oh, great sages, I'm cleaning your eating place and cleaning up this area after you've eaten prasadam. May we take some of your remnants, my mother and I? So he said, yes, you're a nice boy. You have nice behavior. You can eat my remnants. So taking their permission, and this is another thing Prabhupada says in the purport. One should take permission from the devotee to take remnants. But this point can also be made if the guru eats everything on the plate. So yes, the remnants are there in the pot. These are the commentaries in the Puranas that all this principle of Chishta described. All doubts about devotion, all other interests outside of devotion, any anarthas, all these contaminations were removed from Narada's mind by every day eating the remnants of great devotees. The result of taking the remnants of a great person is that you will attain his nature, his swabhava. By taking the remnants of your guru, you will develop the same mood as your guru. Narada, by taking the remnants of the great sages, he developed interest. He developed great interest, inspiration and ruchi, and taste and attraction in the same dharma of the sadhus. Whatever dharma and religious practices they were engaged in as vairagis and as renunciants, he became attracted simply by taking their remnants. Hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, devotee practices. These practices of devotion, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, and Krishna Bhakti, such sadhana, limbs of sadhana became natural for Narada as a result of taking their remnants. When you take the remnants of a great devotee, your mind will turn in the direction of the mind of the person whose remnants you take. So if you take the remnants of a sannyasi, then you will become a sannyasi. Haribo! Goodbye, family life. If you take the remnants of someone who's trying to love Radha and Krishna, then you will also try to love Radha and Krishna. So there's a subtle meaning. There's a subtle meaning to this word uchishta. 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 Uchishta means ishta. Uchishta means to be submissive. Now listen. Ishta, like ishtadev, yes. Uchishta. The subtle meaning of the word uchishta is not to be independent. So you're taking, when you take uchishta, then you become dependent. You're taking, oh, you're above me, you're superior to me. You're my father, you're my guru, you're my husband, you're my teacher, you're superior to me. And I want whatever food you've taken, I want to humbly and respectfully accept that and take that. as I see that you're superior to me. You're higher, you're in position, you're higher than me, but in consciousness and bhav, and bhav and consciousness, you're higher than me, you're more advanced than me. And so I'm dependent on you, I'm below you. So I want to take your remnants. So the subtle meaning of this word uchishtha is not to be independent. So in Vaishnava culture, the whole Vaishnava culture is based on humility. Srinada Pisa Nichena. This is Gaudiya. The whole Gaudiya Vaishnava culture is based on this one verse. Srinada Pisa Nichena Tilray Vasishna Amani Namani Dhyana Kirtaniya Sadahari. And there's another verse that goes with it. These are like brother and sister verses. The other verse is Naham Vipro Nacha Narapratirnapi Vaisho Nashudro Naham Varni Nacha Grihapatir Novanashto Yatirava Kentu Prodhyan Nikala Paramananda Purna Britabdir Gopi Bartu Padakamalira Dasa Dasa Anudasa. This mood of being a servant of the servant of the servant, one cannot actually express this mood or display this mood in his activities unless he has this Dainya Bhava in his heart, unless he has this intense feeling of humility in his heart. Humility and submission must be deeply established in the heart of a devotee for him to always act as a servant of the servant of the servant. Because one cannot artificially act like this, one cannot pretend to act like this or be like this. Either you are or you aren't. You can't fake it. You can't fake being humble. You can't fake being a servant of the servant. It's a genuine trance. It's an expression. It's an outward expression of a genuine state of consciousness. A state of genuine consciousness, of pure consciousness. There's a little bit more here. This is very interesting. So in Vaishnava culture, we consider ourselves to be servants. Das, das, anudas of Lord Krishna. A servant means, what does it mean to be a servant? It means that he's not independent. Not being independent also applies to eating. A devotee, so we say uchishta, the word uchishta means not independent. So a devotee is not independent when it comes to eating. We depend on Krishna. Krishna, first you eat, then I depend on you. If I offer you something, you eat everything. Oh, then I don't eat anything. Or I depend on my guru. I'm dependent on my guru. He's my master. I'm his servant. I'm Guru Das. So my guru calls me, then I take prasadam. If he doesn't call me, I fast. I can't take prasadam. So this is the situation. This word uchishta, it's a very interesting word. A servant means he's not independent. Not being independent also applies to eating. A devotee does not eat independently. The devotee does not independently cook for himself. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that such a person is a thief. And he says if he's eating foodstuffs without offering to me, he's actually a thief. A devotee cooks food only for Krishna's pleasure. Then he takes Krishna's remnants with great respect in a mood of seva and humility. This shows that a devotee is not independent. A devotee is not the independent enjoyer. He's not independent enjoyer. Krishna is the independent enjoyer. What is the cause of material bondage? Why are people bound in this material world? Bondage is caused by the feeling of being independent. It's a feeling. I don't need you. What do I need these yam and niyam, rules and regulations and four principles? I don't need. I'm independent. I'm strong. I'm young. I have money. Hey, look, man, I have money. Money gives me independence. Money gives me power. Money gives me the power of independence. I can choose. I can choose. I can accept. I can reject. I can move. I can jump. I can fly. I can travel. I can purchase. I can buy. I can control. So with money, then we become pride, proud. And with pride, we think we're independent. We think we're the controller. And that's the cause of our downfall. That's the cause of our repeated bondage in the samsara. So it's all about, all starts with eating. So our whole outlook towards food is all about Srinada Pisa Nichena. Our whole outlook towards eating is all about Das, Das, Anudas, about being dependent. It's very interesting. So this shows that devotee is not the independent enjoyer. Material bondage is caused by the feeling of being independent. Nobody really is independent. It's impossible. The non-devotee falsely thinks he's independent, though he's suffering. This is the cause of all the misery in the material world. What is the cause of all the misery in the material world? Thinking and feeling and acting independently of Krishna. Thinking, I'm independent of God. Feeling, I'm independent of God. And acting independently of God, which means eating independently of God, speaking independently of God, touching independently of God, hearing independently of God, smelling independently of God, tasting. This is all the cause of the misery. The simple solution. What is the simple solution? All the misery and suffering and difficulty and problems in the material world. Give up our independence. Very simple. So we can. So how do we begin? How do we begin to again give up this millions and millions of years of independence? How do we begin to give it up? We begin to give it up by giving up independence and eating. This is a big thing. Because we have money in our pocket, we walk down the street, oh, look at those cookies, all right, give me those cookies. Hey, look at that cupcake, oh, all right, slap me those cupcakes, man. Here, take 10 rupees, all right. Oh, aloe tiki, oh, it smells good. It's got some good stuff on it. Oh, this cake will send your mind in ecstasy, you know. I'm independent. So even in eating, there's independence. I mean, we have to give up our independence. Material bondage is caused by the feeling of being independent. Nobody is really can be independent. It's impossible. The non-devotee falsely thinks he's independent, though he's suffering. The simple solution is give up that independence. Begin with eating, not eating independently. Whatever we eat, we should first offer to Krishna. The example is shown by Narada Muni. Only eat Krishna prasadam. Don't leave any remnants. And senior devotees should be served first. Everything is left in the pots is all considered remnants.